Have you had your soup today?
And the cold, crisp taste of Coke is so satisfying, it keeps me from eating something else that might really add those pounds.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to our episode of Sheologians. We are here to...
That's how you know it's going to be good.
We are here today to put the her in Jeremy Camp. Do you remember Jeremy Camp?
Yes. Why is he coming up?
Okay, because I had a question to ask you.
Okay.
And... my answer involves Jeremy Camp.
Okay. Interesting.
So here's the question. And we've asked this question before, but I'm going to add an adjective that changes the question.
Okay.
Okay. So the question I have is, what is the most embarrassing song that makes you cry? But it has to be embarrassing.
Oh,
it has to be like, well, Joy's a little weird for that one. Like, we have to judge you a little bit for this answer.
So, here's a fun fact about me is that, like,
every song makes you cry.
I'm not so much this way when I'm around a lot of people or on the show, but like, I'm kind of a crier. Mm-hmm. Like, if there is any sort of intent, it can even be very little intent, but if there is any sort of emotional strings pulled, I'm probably going to get
carried,
like a little, yeah, misty eyed. And that's just kind of how I am. I fought that for a very long time. I still fight it now because I acknowledge that I don't need to be crying all the time. But, I feel like I have to think about that.
Okay.
You tell me yours, and okay, perhaps that'll jog something for me.
So we did not listen to contemporary Christian music growing up. There was like very little that of contemporary Christian music I was exposed to. I cannot name more than one Jeremy Camp song, but there is a Jeremy Camp song that I can't, and it's not even a fantastic song. Okay. It's not, it's like, if you just read the lyrics, you'd be like, okay, this had potential, and then they just didn't finish it. But the song Give Me Jesus by Jeremy Camp, specifically his version, because Shane have picked it up and other Christian music artists have picked it up. But I can't even sing that song. I can't. Because if I try, it's too late. I'm crying. I'm not crying. I'm like sobbing.
No, I get it. There are songs that I can't sing, especially I find even with hymns, I'll find these little sections of hymns and they resonate with me so much. And then that hymn for a period of time becomes my favorite hymn. And I just want Georgia to learn it. And I need to hear the words. So I just listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
And when I do that with a hymn, I guarantee you, I am not able to actually sing it for several weeks until I kind of become a little desensitized. And then I can finally sing it. And
okay,
like,
that's not embarrassing
it,
because hymns are rich.
I know. But if
hymns
we're singing
are
it in
rich.
Church, like, forget about it. I'm like, okay, I got to skip that verse.
That's Before the Throne for me, by the way. Before the Throne, can't sing that one. Never made it through. I have never once made it through that hymn. It's bad.
I'm like trying to think of.
There's a hymn. Oh, it's such a good song, and I can't. When I had to go give birth to my dead baby, and we were holding her, Eric was like, "Let's listen to a hymn." And now that hymn, nope.
Yeah.
When we sing it in church, I have to excuse myself. And it's a great hymn, and it's forever. One day I'm not there, but that's not embarrassing. Jeremy Camp, Give Me
Yeah.
Jesus. That's embarrassing. Like, that's bad. That's like, what's wrong with me?
Man, I don't know if I have anything
Okay.
that's truly embarrassing.
Okay.
There is, so there's a, which I've already, I know I've mentioned on the show, but it was probably 10 years ago at this point. And yes, I know we haven't quite been going for 10 years, but
Basically.
making a point. So I've mentioned that Chris Rice, also sort of famous at that same time,
Yep.
he has a hymn album that I
Okay.
enjoy, and most of the hymns on there are not, they're not written by him, of course,
Right.
but he wrote one. I
The
think it's, and
bridge.
it's, I
He
think it's
added a
called an
bridge.
un, I, but so there's one that is original that's called the Untitled Hymn, and it is rather emotional for me. I don't know if because he like sticks it amongst all the other hymns, so I'm already in that
You're already,
mindset.
yes.
The thing is, it's a little cheesy, I guess, but I guess the thing is, I'm not really that embarrassed.
Okay.
Maybe I guess my I'm answering the question, what maybe would some other people find
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, that one.
embarrassing? Yeah, I do feel like, well, clearly we're not that embarrassed or wouldn't be sharing.
Right.
But I do think by the time you're in your mid-30s, you should be embarrassed by very little.
Yeah.
If you're not, you may have not been going outside enough.
It's true. Do you
I
ever have
mean,
a.
I managed to do it,
Yeah.
but
Yeah. Do you still. Sometimes I have this experience where I look at my kids and I realize that they're looking at me the way that I looked at my parents when they were in their mid-30s. And it's a little bit of an out-of-body experience for me,
yeah.
where suddenly I'm like, oh, they weren't that old.
Yeah. Yes.
They weren't that old.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, that's such a weird thing, right? And I've seen, because I've seen even recently on TikTok where women come on and they're like, tell me how old you think I am. And then some of these poor women who are 25 are getting 45.
42.
It's just like, oh no. So yeah, I do think some of us are a little more blessed to look younger than we are. And
Yeah.
maybe some of us are not as blessed. And then for maybe for some of us, we the person we're asking is a legitimate child and they have no concept of
No
what
concept.
old actually is.
I no longer have
So
a concept of other people's ages at all. I
I
have
don't either.
zero.
I don't.
I met someone
Yeah,
and I
I
was like,
type.
you could be 22, you could be 42. I have no idea.
Unfortunately, I'm at the point where if you look rather young, I'm probably inclined to think you're younger than you are. But then there is this moment where you just kind of assume everyone is your age. So when you find out you're invited to someone's 45th birthday party and you're like, oh, you're 10
Oh.
years older than me, I would not have ever.
I did
I
not
was
know.
thinking you were my age, even
Right.
though you have an 18-year-old
Right.
somehow. I don't. It's like, but yeah.
Life's weird like that.
Yep. So we had, speaking of just age and little, just littleness, there was something hilarious happened, and I knew I had to tell you about it on the show, but
Okay.
and this is just, any of you that have a 4-year-old in your house, you
The
just know
best.
this kind of hilarity is happening all the time.
Yes.
But just, we had this moment. We were sitting on the couch. I had gone out of the room and I came back in the room. And yesterday we had put some bird seed out in our feeder. And then we kind of sprinkle it on this picnic table. And there was a squirrel sitting on the picnic table, which is right outside our sliding glass door. So Georgia was just sitting on the couch playing. And I go, Georgia, look, there's a squirrel. But they can still see you through the window. So you kind of can't make sudden movements or run up to the window. Because they'll run away and get freaked out. And so I was whispering to Georgia and like telling her, like, come on, like, look at it. I was like, it's a little squirrel. I was like, it's kind of a fat one, though. I was like, it's a fat little squirrel. But I was whispering that. And as I whispered that, some part of her brain heard, it's a magical squirrel. And her face, I can't explain to you what her face looked like. She said, it's a magical one? Like, in that moment, she thought, and I just realized, first of all, I was so disappointed to have to tell her
that it wasn't.
That's not a thing.
Yeah.
But I also, in that, her face told me everything I needed to know about what a magical squirrel would be like.
It would be magical.
And just, the anticipation, like, what, so you're telling me it's a magical squirrel, what is going to happen next?
Right.
It rocked her world. And in this moment, it was just, I just saw her littleness,
yeah.
The what, like the definition of just wonder. And I was like, you're so tiny and just magical yourself.
Yes. I remember very distinctly when Janny was that age, having to talk to her about magic,
mm-hmm.
like that actually being a thing, that actually being a discussion that I had to have with her, because you can like fail on different sides of this, right? Like you can lie to your kids and go, oh yeah, you know, you didn't want to disappoint her, so yes, it's a magical squirrel, and now you're like making up a fake story about what a magical squirrel can do, right?
Which
would be a failure on one end, but then you can fail on the other end and be like, well, there's no such thing as magic.
Right.
And then what do you do when you come across so many stories in the Old Testament? Why are they putting witches to death if
right.
it's, if there's nothing real? You know, what was happening in Exodus with the staff and the snakes? And like, so you have to, so I remember trying to give her categories to try to like understand.
Yeah.
And so for a long time, I mean, probably from the time she was 4 till the time she was 6, sometimes she would just randomly be like, there's real magic. And if you practice it, it's very bad. And like she would just randomly, it was like she had to tell herself.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm.
Practicing magic is bad. And I was like, okay, well, okay.
Yeah. They are like little Rolodexes, and they're just constantly filing through everything they know, just thumbing through it all.
Yes.
And so sometimes they're doing that in response to something you said, but they're doing it regardless of whether it's a response. And I feel like that's why you get, they stop at A and they're like, hey, armadillos. And then they just say an armadillo fact and you're like, okay,
okay,
good.
All right.
But yeah, well, and then because we've been leading up to Easter, we've been trying to do, well, just the story so that by the time we get there, it's fresh in her mind. But so the other night we started just with some miracles. So I guess Jesus's ministry and why he was doing that and all this stuff. But so we covered miracles. And so that was my thought too, one of the best words to describe what a miracle is magic. Like it's, but then they have to be mature enough to understand this distinction between magic practiced and then something that is magical and which came first and what, like what makes it magical is that it's impossible. It it is a manipulation of the natural world and the way things usually are.
Right.
And how is a miracle different that, you know, and so I didn't feel like she was really ready for that.
It's a lot.
But she's, so you're trying to, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's interesting trying to explain to a kid the concept of magic. Cause we really do live in a magical world and we really do. There really is wicked magic being practiced around us all the time, even though we think we eradicated it or we have been taught that it's actually not a problem to be eradicated.
Right.
But yeah, it's just funny. It's
or is cute. A magical age.
Yes, it really is.
Wonderful. And probably one of my, I really enjoyed all my 4-year-olds. I'm really looking forward to Ransom being 4 because 4 is just.
He is going to be a hoot. They all are.
Yeah.
But Ransom just, he never disappoints.
No.
He exceeds expectations.
All the time in everything.
Yep.
Yep. Okay, so we didn't do this. I'm Summer. That's Joy. And you can leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. We have had well over 100 women joining us every Wednesday to talk about Rosaria Butterfield's newest book, 5 Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age. You are invited. If you've missed any past discussions, they are available for you to watch. You can jump in whenever you want. That is all happening at patreon.com/theologians. And if you like the show, that's how you can support the show. And I don't think I need to tell them anything else. This one's you. You take it away. This was this was your idea. This is a great, I'm excited.
Yeah, I think we, well, so I guess the best way to put this is that this is, I guess this episode's a direct response to something that we have all been exposed to, not super recently. I don't think of this as the most it's not so much in the news cycle anymore or your For You page or whatever, but I think you're probably still seeing it and the impact is lingering certainly. But the song by Billie Eilish, What Was I Made For? And the
just won an Oscar, I think.
Yeah, yes. And the connection it has to the Barbie movie and the impact that that had. And I think for any of you that know anything about the situation, you see where we're going here. But so I happen to think that Billie Eilish is very legitimately talented. She obviously has a very unique, skilled voice. Certainly not something you work your way into, sort of a naturally occurring talent. She's definitely on my radar in general, but she, I started out watching her with more curiosity, but she's an influential force in our world, especially not so much for us,
but for younger
and the people listening, but for younger people. And, you know, I say that, but plenty of women who might not fit into the audience of this podcast were influenced by the Barbie movie, impacted by the Barbie movie. And the song is its own standalone thing too. There's a music video that's very curated and meaningful. And then I think a lot of exposure was just that if you happen to be on TikTok, that was a song being used in many, it's a meaningful song for 2023. We'll just put it that way. And I think it will continue to be, but anyway, so the song is very straightforward. It's in the title, What Was I Made For? And so I think that I wanted to do this episode just because I mean, ultimately, isn't that kind of the question that feminism is attempting to answer? Isn't that the question that, of course, all secular worldly philosophies are trying to answer? That's kind of the big question, right? But it just so happens that you're seeing feminists answer that question now. That's who we allow to answer that question. And that's the answer that our culture seems to find particularly meaningful. So I was like, that's actually, I'm watching the music video, I'm understanding the nuance and the theme of what I'm watching. I understand the song. And I'm like, well, we know this answer. We know the answer to this question.
I have a question.
Okay.
So I've heard, I don't believe I've ever heard the song from start to finish.
Okay.
Like, I've heard clips over and over of the song.
Right.
I know that it's a very, the piano is simple and beautiful. I know her voice is beautiful. And it's moving in that way. But I remember thinking, oh, this, it makes me sad that so many people are asking this question. Christianity has an answer for the question, but my question is there an answer given in the song that I've missed?
Well, so I think the implication, and it's so the association with the Barbie movie, that's, for those of you that don't know, the song was written for that movie. It wasn't just picked.
Okay.
It wasn't written already and then picked for it. It was written for that movie.
For the movie. Okay.
And
I didn't know that.
So it is a very, very sad song. There is no answer in the song, though I believe the implication is that based off of the music video and its affiliation with the Barbie movie, is that you're more than just a pretty little thing that's dressed up for people's enjoyment. You're not just to entertain other people. You're not just to be used and played with by other people. Which of course is
on its face not problematic, really,
right? But we also understand the feminist undertones that hang out there, and it's just not much of an answer. Mm-mm. I think, especially for a culture of women, we've talked about this many, many times. A culture of women that want a list of exactly what they should be doing. It's like, well, you shouldn't, I guess the answer to the question is you don't need a list. You're not made for anyone else's enjoyment. There should be no standard of you being a perfect little perky pink.
Right.
You know, and so I think it's an answer that doesn't really offer much guidance at all, which shouldn't surprise any of us, because most of the answer to the anthropology of man nowadays is just kind of like whatever you think you should be, or whatever makes you happy ultimately is kind of what, I guess what's the distilled standard? It just kind of like whatever makes you happy and whatever doesn't hurt anybody else or doesn't impair anyone else's autonomy. Do you have anything to add to that? I feel like that kind of covers it. Their answer's pretty simple, I suppose, but wrong.
Yeah. I think I think part of the problem is that you can't really answer the question what I was made for without first knowing who you are. And I think so, in order, people feel that in order to answer, like, what am I supposed to do? They have to go discover who they are. And you do this sort of self-discovery through experiences, right? So this is that, you know, Nancy Piercy's, she talks about it all the time, this distinction between your personhood and physical matter, and how ultimately the more you experience, the more valuable you are. And I think that's kind of the message of the movie too, where it's like, you have to go have these big experiences to find out who you are. And the movie ends. I remember somebody writing a very long article about how deep and meaningful it was that the movie ends with Barbie going to a gynecologist, and how that experience of being a real woman was like kind of her first step into real womanhood, which is also hysterical because we're talking about people who believe in a transgender worldview where biological material doesn't actually give you any information about who you are. So that felt like a real, like, stepping on a rake and getting hit in the face moment, as far as what they're trying to tell people. but I think the big draw of the song for me, and just that so many people are asking this question, is a real sadness, because of course you're made in the image of God. You are yearning, every human being is yearning for meaning and to understand what we're, who we are and what we're supposed to do. And of course we make it so complicated when it's so simple. We're made to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And if you want to know what your marching orders are, you just have to go back to Genesis and the creation ordinance.
Yeah. Been,
you know, we talked about this in book club because Rosaria talks about the creation ordinance and understanding what it means to be made in the image of God. And part of just the goodness of God is that he doesn't leave us to wonder. And we're not just down here scrounging around in the dirt trying to find meaning. Like, we're given it. We are given our meaning. We're granted meaning by being made how we're made, and in his image. And the creation ordinance gives us our rules and our job, and our primary work, and it describes how we are created as male and female, and then what male and female is supposed to do. And we don't have to feel lost and sad. I don't have to do certain experiences in order to be woman. Like, I was born a woman. I didn't choose that. But those are my marching orders. And that means that in order for me to be the most fulfilled, I must properly worship with the tools that have been given to me. I must fulfill my job and my rule, as I was given it. And I think that's a lot of what we see people bucking against, is really, you were made for something and you didn't have any say in it. Like, you didn't. You didn't choose who you are. You didn't choose your physical genetics. You didn't choose the time you were born in or the people you were born to. You didn't even choose your skill sets, right? Like, there's nothing that you chose. Like, before the foundation of the world, you were planned. And I think that that is a big thing that people have a hard time with. But I find it to be extremely comforting and, like, relaxing. It's like, I have to ask,
Yeah, I think
remember what I'm made for.
I think the sadness is not because we don't know the answer to the question. The sadness is that the world is doing what it thinks. The world has answered the question, what was I made for? And the answer produces empty sadness.
Yeah.
Self exploration. It doesn't, doing whatever makes you happy. It doesn't, it is an answer to the question, but it's not an answer that was going to provide you with any meaning, which is the only reason anyone asked the question. The
right.
question is, who am I? Why am I here? Why did I get beamed down? I mean, we were just talking about magic at the beginning. Like, why am I just, well, and really, if you believe in evolution, really, you are here by just pure
no meaning, right?
Like, and just so there's nothing. It's almost impossible that you're here, even that human life even happened.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that there's a whole conversation we can have too about. There's clearly a, especially when it comes to Barbie movie and this song, there is a commentary being made on the so-called social construct that has created a definition of what a woman is. So in my mind, I was kind of like, I'm just going to answer the question, what am I made for? So what is a woman made for? And I mean, you're absolutely right. You don't have to get far into the story. What?
First couple pages.
We just have to go back to when God made everything. Because if you haven't read the creation account in a while, I recommend you do it. It's a lot fuller than a Sunday school version. There's nothing wrong with knowing what was created on which day. But you might even be surprised if you haven't read it in a while that there are things, it's even kind of explained why he made certain things. Like when he made plants and it was like, oh, the animals will eat those. So it's not, we're not just, you know, I'm just saying, go back if you haven't looked at it in a while. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear. You were just talking about, of course, how Rosaria talks about, it's pretty clear that there were humans made, and the main distinction that's made is that one of them is a man and one of them is a woman. And what we've talked about here on this show often is that there is a distinction, and that means it's different to be born, it's different to be made a human man than a human female. So there are different things there. And then of course, Genesis, the second chapter of Genesis goes a little bit more into the specifics of how, woman was made. I think we get more details on how a woman was made than how a man was. And then of course there are very explicit marching orders given in the first chapter, well, and the second chapter, but we call that the Dominion Mandate, which is just simply, oh gosh, how quickly can I, to be fruitful and, yeah.
And subdue it.
Right.
Multiply, fill the earth, subdue it.
Right.
So the original plan was that God would have all these image bearers all over the world, reflecting his glory, taking dominion, and the subduing part too is important too. I think all the time just about how, like, everything that was necessary to build your iPhone, God buried in the ground in creation.
Well, and that was in the second chapter. That's where you, those are the little details that you get. You learn that there was no cultivated, he made all kinds of plants, every plant that exists now. He made a version of that that created all the genetic material that creates everything that you see here and now. But there was no cultivated plants until Adam cultivated them. And that doesn't just mean we're all meant to be gardeners. It means that we're meant to pull, like you said, pull things out of the earth and make something with them, put things in the earth, grow them, feed ourselves.
Yeah.
And so,
that work has been cursed, because I should mention that the way that we pull these things out of the earth to make our iPhones now is pretty wretched and cursed, but
yeah. Yes. But even then, like, our curses, we're given separate curses. And I think that it's notable that we each have a different part to play in the Dominion mandate. Now, Dominion over the animals and the birds and cultivating the earth, you might have more questions specifically about how that looks like, but we understand that the woman was made to be a helper of the man. So I think taking dominion and subduing the earth might look different for both of us. And you might just say, like, oh, well, you're just making that up. Oh, no.
Should we pause?
Sorry, just one sec.
Let's pause.
I think I remember.
The magic of the four-year-old. Anyway.
Yeah.
We're back.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to try to recollect them. Yeah, I was going to say collect, but recollect. We're just always in a state of recollecting our thoughts, right?
We are, constantly.
What I was going to say is that the Dominion Mandate clearly means two different things for the two different people that it applies to. And that's just obvious because the very first part of the Dominion Mandate is to be fruitful and multiply. And each of us, male and female, have a unique role to play in that process. And so I would go ahead and say that if we want to just specifically say what was a woman made for, she was made to have a husband and have children. Now, does that mean that's always going to happen? Do we live in a fallen world? Yes, it's not always going to happen. But I do think that...
that's normative.
That's normative.
That's the word you and I always use. Like, it's normative to get married and have kids. That doesn't mean that every person will get married and have kids.
We also believe that the prayer to have a husband and have children is a blessed prayer, and prayed in faith is answered.
Yeah.
Doesn't always look exactly how you might think. That's beside the point. So yeah, I do think that women were meant to have a man that they are under the authority of, and they're fertile. In a perfect world, everyone has a man that they're in submission to, and they're having children. They're filling the earth. And so you were made with a very biologically, in a very specific way, to carry the child. I do think that lends itself to quite a lot of traits. If you want to know what you were made for, I think you could even expand that to, I don't want to skip the specific meaning of a woman having children and having a husband, but I do also think you were made for fertility in some kind of way, which I do feel like is very important in cultivating the earth, and vitality, growing, taking raw material and turning it into something else. So we can, I think it's fair to extrapolate that you were made to beautify. You were made to keep your home or your garden or wherever you are in a way that is feminine. And I know that there's still, some people are still wanting to be more specific, but I just think too, that what that means is that you are not made, well, I kind of alluded to this for sure. So you're made to have children, you're not autonomous, so you are not separate. You're made from man. Eve was made from man, so she was not existent without him. And just by that, I'm going to go ahead and say that you are not made to be alone.
Yeah.
I do see a sort of somewhat disturbing trend of women going out and living in off-grid cabins
by themselves, 45
miles from anyone, and they take their cat. And this is something, so yeah, I was single for a long time. And one thing that I got super into and had made some definite plans. I would say I stopped fairly early in the process, but I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail. And that requires you to be alone for up to 6 months. Now you're not alone all the time. You're not alone every day. You're probably not going to be alone in the evenings, like when you make camp. But I don't think a woman was meant. There was never a woman, like from the very beginning, she was not alone.
Right.
Man was alone at first. And right. I think you could make the case that there are certain instances and certain moments where that equips them to do necessary parts of their role and their dominion making. But I don't believe that women are meant to be alone. And that includes in general. I believe they're meant to be non-autonomous. So I do believe they're meant to be in submission to a husband. But I also just mean that we were not made to be by ourselves.
Yeah. Well, one thing I saw and really appreciated about you when you were single was just that, and I think this is a great idea for single women, is that you were very much involved and a part of your church and the lives of the families in your church. Like, it was very much something that you invested in. You had real, genuine friendships with other women, with their children, in terms of being busy with like hospitality. It was like, everybody knows that Joy throws a good party. The food's going to be good. The hospitality is going to be good. It's going to be thought out. You lived with other single women in the church. Like, you were not a lone wolf who wasn't finding ways to be a woman who is serving in the church when you didn't have a husband and kids yet. Like, it wasn't like you said, you loved hiking. So there was this idea that you'd go do this fun hiking thing.
Yeah.
But there came a point where you were like, you know what? Being a woman alone out on a trail for 6 months is probably not a great idea. That's probably not how I should be investing my time.
Yeah.
And I
knew that, I understood that there would be an emotional consequence to that, because I really do. I think that, well, physically and emotionally, it's not a good idea. I think there are reasons why physically a woman should not be on her own.
Yeah.
That's also why she has a father before she has a husband. And now in many instances where that relationship is so broken, the relationships with fathers, young women have pastors. They have people, right. Grandfathers, people looking out for them, because women shouldn't be alone physically. But I also, just emotionally, women need to not be alone with themselves emotionally.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Like, I think that I cannot, I cannot explain how much of my growth has happened. I would almost say it exclusively happens when I'm not alone with my thoughts, when I'm not the final authority, when you're with people, you are revealing who you are, what's on the inside, because what comes out is what's on the in, right? And so if no one's ever there to see what's what's pouring out, I think that men can be. I think about even just the history, the way that men took dominion over just North America, coming over, and you know, maybe not all of that was done in a way that we can fully understand, and maybe some of it was wrong. That's not what we're talking about here.
Right.
But what I'm talking about is a man coming, working alone, cutting down trees, digging in the ground. I think that it's just different. And I don't think you were made for that. And I think that looking over the fence at the abilities and the dominion taking methods of a man, the closest man, and just thinking, well, I just have to do whatever he is doing. I think that is what has caused so many people to ask the question, what was I made for? That is why this movie and the song resonates so much with people. You want to know why women now want to know what was I made for? It's because they've been trying to act like men for decades. Yeah. And it's not that it's an unanswered question, like I was saying. It's an unsatisfactory answer. There is no satisfaction. There's no fullness in the answer. Because you're trying to figure out who you were, who you are, why you were made, but you're not keeping in mind how you were made.
Right.
What you were made for.
Right.
And I mean, that just goes back to this, like, we were all made for the same thing. We're all made in his image, right? The obsession with all being made in his image, even though that verse is right there next to the other highly distinctive verses that we just talked about.
Yes. I think something that a lot of, for Christians, something to consider is that we have, and this is true if you're not a Christian too, but we're speaking to Christians. And whenever you leave God's good design, you are going to run into trouble. And leaving what he has said is true about you behind is always a dark place, and it doesn't work. And so whether you're single, whether you're married, if you're a woman, you have your marching orders. There's a certain way that you ought to carry yourself that is distinctly feminine. And I think where some of the, like you mentioned earlier, a lot of times we want like a list. Like, okay, if I'm going to be feminine, then what clothes do I have to wear? What kind of food do I have to make? What kind of words? How should my voice sound? I think we've so narrowed, when you narrow it down to a list of do's and don'ts, you're missing so much beauty and so much goodness and so much creativity that I think, God is so good to have built in diversity into his creation. not all trees are the same, right? Not all flowers are the same. And I think as Christian women, something that I love is talking to my friends, my sisters in Christ, and hearing about the things that they're interested, the things that they do, because we're not all the same. And we're not given the same gifts. We're not given the same talents. We're not given the same kind of resources. And finding out what my ladies do with their talents and time and resources and strengths and skill sets is so fun to me. But I think that's also where we sometimes miss the mark, where we think, oh, well, in order to be a biblical woman, in order to do that, then I have to do X, Y, Z. But the X, Y, Z that you have to do is glorify God. Like, that's what you have to do.
Right.
That's what you have to do. And men, they have to glorify God. And I think it takes wisdom and discernment and discipleship often from the church and from other women to really come to grasp what that means. But I think we get into a lot of trouble there. And what we need to do is really go back to the basics. Who are you? You're a woman made in the image of God. You're meant to glorify and enjoy Him. Now go do that wherever He's placed you and whoever He's made you to be. And I think part of what will kind of clear the fog of, okay, what do I do, is actually thankfulness. So here's what I mean by that. I live in the desert. This is where the Lord has placed me. And yesterday it was just a normal Thursday, and I had, where I was at was beautiful weather, live in the desert, 5 kids with a lot of energy. And I was like, okay, Lord, how can I glorify you and bless these kids today? So what we did was we went out on a little hike. And we just appreciated the natures. We enjoyed the smells and the sights and the flowers and the bushes, and just appreciated where we were. And I feel like I could safely say that yesterday, that was even though it was like hitting the trails and it was adventuresome and was my heart rate hitting 170, wearing my fat toddler on my back, crawling up some steep hills? Yes, it was. That was hard, but I would
great
say
cardio.
Yeah, that was my cardio for the day. I would say it was feminine. This was enjoying God. This was glorifying God. Those were my marching orders yesterday. And that's not what my day looked like today. But I just wanted to practice like being thankful and looking around at what I've been given this day as my job, as my marching orders. What am I supposed to do today? Sometimes you just need to open your eyes and look around and be like, okay, how can I practice some thankfulness for the weather, for where I live, for who I'm with, and enjoy. I think that's part of it too, is like actually enjoying what God has given you. Like, okay, these are the people I've been given, and this is the place that I live in. And I think a lot of times that helps when people get tripped up in the, well, what should my to-do list look like? Well, I don't know what your to-do list today should look like. I can't determine that for you. But I bet if you just like opened your eyes and looked for ways to glorify God today, it's going to become fairly obvious, if you're paying attention, what your to-do list should be. And that's also a prayer that I pray, is like, Lord, help my priorities today be the ones that you want them to be. Like, help them. Like, I want, so often as women, there's so many things we want to accomplish, but it's like, is my to-do list glorifying God? Am I paying attention to my marching orders? Are my first priorities my, am I letting my main priorities be my main priorities? And then another thought I have too is just like, we were made to work. And you and I have talked about this plenty. We are very anti-laziness. We are anti being not creative with your time or your resources. I'll never forget the email I got years and years ago when we were talking about this, and someone was like, you know, isn't trying to be creative prideful, because then you're trying to be like God? I'm like, no. My whole life is organized around trying to be like God, like trying to be holy like God, trying to live like Jesus. Like, that is your job. That you should be doing that. You should be trying to be thoughtful.
That's and a part, that is a part of God gave women the ability to create. Like, yeah. Now, I'm not saying that you are so magical that you grow a baby. No.
Not in that weird goddess way.
God gave you that. God made you that way. When he made you a girl,
yeah,
he made you that way. And he made you that way differently than he made a man that way.
Right.
You can create life to the glory of God.
Yeah.
It glorifies God. He made you that way. Women are absolutely, if you're not doing anything creative in your day, you are going to be asking, what was I made for?
Yeah.
And it's so clear to me that the list of what a woman should be seen doing and looking like is so feminist programming. It has feminist programming all over it, because a woman is just a list. She is just doing whatever a woman looks like. When you see her, she looks like a woman, and she's doing what things a woman would be doing if I saw her. And it's just, it is the most superficial, which is why you can then say, as long as she looks like a woman and is doing woman things, that makes her a woman. No, it's super. It's if you were born a girl, you're a girl. Now, in our day and age, are you going to have to train yourself to faithfulness? Yes. Are you going to have to train certain things to femininity? Yes, absolutely. But to just say that the list is the social construct that feminists are claiming to need this deep answer to.
Right.
But that's never been what a woman was.
Right.
A woman is a person born a woman.
Yeah.
And given given specific marching orders, that's a part of her womanness though. And I'm not saying, you figure it all out and newsflash, you're born in a time where your marching orders aren't maybe quite so spelled out for you, but we should see that as freedom. We should see that as tons and tons of hard work not done by feminists. I'm not talking about freedom. I'm not talking about equality and all that. I'm just saying we live in a world where you are more of the master. You and your husband are the determiner of your day, instead of, well, what are we going to do today? Better figure out what we're going to eat.
I think one thing I'm going to say, this might seem out of left field, but I do think because we are battling against hardcore materialists, I do think, and it's funny because it's like materialists, right? They say that personhood has, who you are has nothing to do with your physical body. And we reject that outright, right? So we're saying, when you were born, God designed you a certain way, and your physical body tells you what certain way you were designed. Okay. Right. So there's a lot of information about you in your physical body and even in your marching orders, right? Because sometimes people are born with genetic abnormalities, physical problems, and that's part of your marching orders too, is how do I glorify God and enjoy Him forever given this physical ailment? That is part of your marching orders, and that's not something that you chose. We say all the time, like, okay, well, one of the parts of the creation mandate is that you were made to work. We were made to work. And what I'm thinking of when I say that specifically is that that some of the information that your body gives you, we just totally ignore as unimportant. So one thing that you were meant to do was eat, right? You were meant to sleep. These are two things that you should glorify God in. You should be getting your sleep and you should be eating. And there's all kinds of ways you can sin with eating, but I just want to say, like, your physical body was meant for movement. And this is something that, I needed to hear at some point. Like, we know what happens, you know, the tragedy in so many orphanages is all these babies who are left in cribs, right? And they aren't picked up and they aren't held. They don't ever get to move around. We know that it's extremely devastating to their life, to their physical life, to their experience of life. It's damaging to their bodies. Like, you were meant to move. Like, your body does better when you eat, sleep, and move. And that should give you some information about your day as well. Right. We live in such a sedentary time where we just don't even realize how much we're not taking care of those needs. And we're holding ourselves back, I think, a lot of times by being fearful of food, fearful of, you know, having lots of fears around sleep, sleep deprivation, sleeping too much. There's moving too much. Well, if I move this way, it's going to be bad for me. And it's like, we live in such a fearful time. But look around, read the room. You were meant to eat, sleep, move. You were meant to work. All of those things are pointing towards, like, eternal truths. God rested. I mean, this is all pointing towards everything that you do in your physical body can be done with thankfulness and then glorified back, like, given thanks to the Lord in. So I know that maybe that sounds weird, but, like, I think we need to have this brain shift of, like, oh, sin and fallenness, and it affects all these things. And like, kind of, I feel like I talk to a lot of women who are very fearful. They're fearful of food. They're fearful of movement. They're fearful they're not getting the right kind of sleep or the right amounts of sleep. I know how that hard that one can be. But you were made a physical creature to do physical things, and that's good, and it will bless you. It will bless you to work and to, you know, what's the phrase? I don't want to die without any scars, right? Like, our physical bodies are degrading. They will not last forever. They will not always move the same. Like, let's use them up for the glory of the Lord. Like, have those stretch marks for the glory of the Lord. Like, use your time, be used up. You don't want to die full of Botox and fillers. It doesn't work anyway. It's obvious when you're old and you've been doing that and you look like the crypt keeper. Like, there's no, like, use it up, get those smile lines, get those laugh lines. And just keep that in mind. And then the last thing I really wanted to say too is that if you're a Christian, what you are made for is so deeply tied to who you are and who God has said that you are. And that is, I think, if you want to get what am I made for right, just having this banner over you of, like, I am who God says I am. I am redeemed. I am not under condemnation. I was chosen before the foundation of the world. I've been given the Holy Spirit. I have all I need for life and holiness. I'm one with God. I'm kept by God. Just remembering these promises of who you are as what scripture has said about you, what God has said about you, the fact that you have access to the Father, the fact that you're going to eternal rest, like the fact that you can do all things through Christ, having those firmly set in your heart is not going to have you adrift on like, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
Those ground you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, it's really about having the satisfactory full answer to the question is what gives you your marching orders, and it gives you your purpose. And it, I mean, we're not against lists here, but
no, not all lists. That's
but,
true.
You know, if it's important, it's important to minister to yourself, but those are the types of things that should be on your list. Eternal things, issues of faithfulness, and I mean, really focus on obedience and faithfulness is, I mean, that will make you, you're already a woman if you were born a woman. And that means that your desire for faithfulness and obedience will be feminine.
Right.
That, like, I don't know how else to say it. It, instead of trying to look like a woman, just be one. If you are, like, if you're a woman, just be one. And if you have the right answer to the question, what am I made for? It won't look like a list of things, certain types of things to wear. Now, it may influence your desire for faithfulness and obedience is going to influence how you look and what people see you doing when they see you out and about or when they see you in your home. But yeah, I just think that if you know who you are, it's not going to be hard to look like a woman.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, I think that we're so wrapped up in wanting to look a certain way. It's like, well, like you were saying, the very first thing is to be obedient and to enjoy God.
Mm-hmm.
Do that, and you will do it you are inclined to do it in a feminine way. God, obedience to God does not lead women to inclined to obedience in a masculine way. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
it just doesn't. Now, I think that there's, and that in that specific example, obedience from men and women, masculine and feminine obedience will look very similar. So sometimes that's going to be the answer you get, is that there right. isn't, it's not super distinct. And that's the thing, is I think maybe certain things aren't super distinct. And that's why we feel the need, like we feel like we're missing something. Like, I need to specifically set myself apart as feminine. Maybe that's where, you know, the list comes from or whatever. But sometimes obedience won't make you look super feminine, other than the fact that you're a woman doing it. I don't know. I hope that makes sense. I hope it doesn't just sound like I'm saying, like, if you're a woman, then you're a woman. But that's kind of what I'm saying. It's kind of what I'm saying. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we're just, you know, I'm very anti, and maybe we'll talk about this next week some more and go more in depth into it. Priorities, principles over methods is very important in this discussion. It's very important. And I think what you're saying is that if your overarching principle is, I want to glorify God and be faithful and be obedient, that is not going to produce a line of printed out Barbie dolls where we all look the same. That's not what's going to happen. That's not how God has designed it. when we seek to be obedient, it is going to produce diversity among what we all look like. And that is sometimes so hard for us to wrap our brains around, because it's like, well, we're all women. It's like, okay, well, that's fine. It's going to look different. Your method is going to look different. I love making sourdough. I can't crochet. I just can't do it. My brain does not do it. I don't understand it. My hands will not comply. I will never be a crocheter. It's just, I don't get it. And so we are anti-lists in terms of, okay, in order to be a feminine woman, I have to crochet, or I have to bake this, or I have to dress like this. You were made to glorify God and to enjoy him forever and to worship him. Now go do that in your context with what you've been given and who you are. And there is no one size fits all list for that. And you shouldn't want there to be. You shouldn't want there to be. That would be, it would be miserable. If I had to crochet to be a woman, I could not be a woman. I just, it's just, and that's,
there's just, well, like you were saying, there's just so much beauty and diversity. And I think that you can see the beauty and diversity in God's creation. I don't mean this in a woke type of way. I'm just saying, like, look in your front yard.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the diversity of what's been made.
Yeah.
And that's in your churches, that's in your group of friends. The one last thing that I really wanted to say is just, like, we caught you, feminists. The question, what was I made for? It's obviously clever because it's in reference to a doll, which is literally made and produced from plastic and hair and paint and all of that. But the obvious meaning, the understanding of the Barbie movie, the understanding and resonance of the song, people know that they're made. They know that Barbie didn't just climb out of a pond one day and then someone was like, I gotta sell this in a store.
It was engineered.
She was made.
Yep.
She was made, which really is like a very creepy version of the Barbie story. Maybe someone should consider.
Yeah, that could be a horror Barbie. It was your idea.
But yeah, so I'm saying there's a reason why there's a whole philosophical commentary that we could make on that.
Uh-huh.
But I just want to go ahead and say that these are the moments where we can very humbly, but also be very satisfied that we have caught the world admitting that they understand that they were made for something. They may not feel satisfied with the answer they got. They may claim they don't know the answer, but they do know why they're made, and they know that they were made. So yeah.
Amen.
And that's just, I mean, that's that I didn't see the Barbie movie. I had no desire. At one point I was like, maybe I should see it for some sort of theologians discussion. I had a woman behind me in a grocery tell me that, like, her granddaughters loved it and they're about the same age as Georgia. It never struck me as a movie that would be appropriate for someone that young. This is not us endorsing or saying don't ever go see the Barbie movie. but yeah, I definitely think that the world, the Barbie movie itself, the song and the response to the movie, it just shows,
says a
it
lot.
Proves, yes, it proves where, it shows where we're at culturally and philosophically, but also just that we know who we are, and that our attempt to deny who we are and what we were made for has clearly been painful and caused lots of problems for people.
My favorite thing about the Barbie movie is that the only good or funny or interesting or memorable part of it was Ken.
That's what I heard. Because everyone, of course, was upset that Margot Robbie was not nominated.
The patriarchy strikes again.
Yeah. Yes.
I died. I did watch it. I did watch it because I wanted to know if my girls could watch it. I watched it, and it is legitimately one of the dumbest throwaway. The only reason that it's being talked about is because of feminism and because they wanted it to be important. The only entertaining or funny part of that movie, or even mildly interesting part of that movie, was Ken. His performance was hilarious. Everything that the Kens did was hilarious and funny, like genuinely funny. No other character in that movie was remotely interesting, including Barbie herself. So hilarious. And they could not have failed harder as far as I'm concerned. Like, you failed. The fact that your only interesting character was Ken in the Barbie movie?
Yeah, right. What?
How did you do that?
Yes.
Anyway.
And just, there's definitely something to be said about, I'll probably see it at some point, but I have felt this way about movies sometimes where I'm just like, this is a little on the nose. Like, you are clearly making a movie about strong womanhood, and it's your ticket to just success nowadays.
Yes.
We have such an undiscerning palette that it's like, oh, is this about female empowerment? And it's just going to get worse from here. It's already gotten worse. But
it was so bad. It was so bad.
Like, so now a movie, for example, all a movie has to do now to be good is have two gay people in it.
Yeah, like, right.
Okay. Is that really our standard?
But so deep. So beautiful. All right, guys, don't forget to join us at patreon.com/sheologians. There's 100+ other ladies having a good time with us every Wednesday. Feel free to leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. And we'll see y'all next week.
See ya. Give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Just give me Jesus.